A lot of people spend a lot of their time trying to convert people to listen to podcasts that aren't converted. People that are on social media love social media. People that are out networking, they're doing something else. You want to convert the converted, people that are already listening to podcasts.
Most hosts never achieve the results they hoped for. They're falling short on listenership and monetization, meaning their message isn't being heard and their show ends up costing them money. This podcast was created to help you grow your listenership and make money while you're at it. Get ready to take notes. Here's your host, Adam Adams.
What's up, podcaster? It is Adam A. Adams, and you're listening to the podcast on podcasting. And today I am interviewing another podcaster like you. And by the way, if you want to be on the show, if you want to get the additional exposure for your show and be a guest on the podcast on podcasting, you can reach out to me at team@growyourshow.com. Our guest today is Rochelle Grow, but she spells grow differently than I spell grow. I spell it G-R-O-W. So when you go to growyourshow.com, you're going to spell G-R-O-W. But when you go and connect with Rochelle Grow, that's going to be G-R-O-H, slightly different and a little bit cooler. And I'm thinking about changing mine, but the URL is kind of expensive. Rochelle, how are you?
I'm doing awesome. Thank you.
Good. Good. Hey, I want to talk about a couple of things. So for our listener, what I want them to get out of today's episode is a little bit about your podcasting journey, the pros, the cons, what you did right, what you didn't do right. So feel free to be vulnerable. By the way, if you're listening and you want Rochelle's full bio, it's already in the show notes. You can just scroll down. She's actually the founder of Cut Class, and we're going to talk a little bit about what that means. We're going to talk about her podcast called Allergic to Small Talk, which I think we've done a lot of small talk already on this episode, so she's probably over it. She actually currently lives in the UK, which is awesome. She doesn't have that accent yet, but her spouse does. And we are going to be talking about managing your workflow as a podcaster and how you manage your time. Some things that you can do to make that a little bit easier. But first, Rochelle, I want to talk about Cut Class and Allergic to Small Talk so that the listener gets a little bit of background on what you're doing. So what is Cut Class? What does it mean? Why did you start it?
Sure. So Cut Class is comprised of a team of small business coaches. Myself and my business partner, Leslie, we met at Pepperdine University getting our executive MBAs in 2013. And we've just remained really great friends ever since. And when the pandemic hit, we decided we wanted to start our own business together. So we decided to create Cut Class. And we wanted to dive into the online learning industry. And when we did that, we stumbled upon a woman named Amy Porterfield. And she was talking about how to create a online course and how to take your expertise and turn that into coaching others. And one of the ways she said that you can promote yourself is either to have a vlog, a blog, or a podcast. And so when I was evaluating one of those three options, podcast is the one that stood out to me the most for a couple of reasons. One, I didn't have to do my hair and makeup like I have to do on this show. So thank you.
You're welcome.
And two, it's easier for me to prepare a script when I'm creating a podcast. At the time, because I was such a green podcaster, I wasn't really comfortable like kind of rolling with the flow and kind of going with an organic conversation. It actually kind of made me a bit uncomfortable. So I thought the podcast would be a great way for me to promote and also educate my audience on what I do with Cut Class.
So Cut Class is meant for people that don't want to spend $150,000 on their education, but instead they can skip class or cut class with you and learn how to still make a whole bunch of money. Is your podcast, is it along the same lines? Does it help serve the same avatar that you would have in your business?
Yeah, 100%. So I focus on teaching small business owners how to grow their business through business networking. And so that's kind of the reason behind the podcast name, Allergic to Small Talk. A lot of people that go out networking will say, God, I like to network, but I just don't want to do the small talk. So I named my podcast Allergic to Small Talk, and my business partner named her podcast Out to Launch because she specifically teaches people to ditch their 9-to-5 to start their own business. Mm. And so what we teach on both of our podcasts is relative to exactly what we offer in our coaching session. So it's literally like bite-sized chunks broken down over a podcast.
That's cool that each of you started a podcast. I wouldn't have expected that. And they have different names. And I'm curious, because you run a business together, are you a pretty regular guest on her podcast and vice versa?
That's a really great question. And no, we're not, actually. I think since we've started our podcast, we've been a guest maybe on each other's podcast, maybe twice. Mm. So yeah, we kind of stay clear of each other's podcasts, not for any particular reason, but we just haven't really like done any like crossover really.
Yeah. And you said Amy Porterfield said you have to have a blog or something else. Can you say podcast. That again? Or a podcast, yeah. A blog, a vlog, or a podcast. And you chose podcast. And the reason why is because you wanted to have those conversations, or can you say that reason one more time?
The main, like a couple of the reasons was one, it was a lot easier for me to get ready to do a podcast versus a blog because I wasn't comfortable writing. Like at the time, it wasn't my strong suit. I've gotten much better at writing. So I can actually write blogs and write my descriptions for my podcast. And the second was a vlog, which is kind of a combination between a podcast and a blog. And I was like, well, I don't want to get ready. And I'm also not ready to kind of spit out organic content in front of a video. And I just thought that would be so much more taxing, editing wise, lighting wise. Like I wasn't ready for that yet. So podcast cut out a couple of elements of that organic conversation that I would need to have with a camera. And I also didn't need to get ready with hair and makeup for delivering a podcast.
Okay. And what have you learned? Is it harder than you thought it was going to be or easier than you thought it was going to be?
Definitely, it was a lot harder than I thought it was going to be. I think for a couple of reasons. One, I really underestimated the workflow that goes into the production and post-production of an episode. We, as listeners, hear maybe 30 minutes to 1 hour of a show that typically it takes a good 2 to maybe 4 hours from pre-production all the way to post-production when it hits your ears. So I think as a listener, you really underestimate how much time that person and the team puts into actually creating that show for you.
It's strange because I also underestimated the workflow, and I know a lot of people that do. I think that's interesting. And then you mentioned something like it takes 4 hours from start to finish, and it takes my team way longer. I think we spend probably at least just on the editing, probably at least 4 hours. And then I have another team that does like the show notes, and they spend a couple of hours to make sure that the show notes are good. The video production, because we do video. So this doesn't count on yours if you're not doing it. But the video production usually takes us a day of editing to make sure that's ready to go. And then we do marketing and email it to our guests and do social media. Like when we have clients and we do all that stuff for them, it ends up taking almost 3 days worth of work to do one 30, 40, 50 minute episode. But I definitely underestimated it in the beginning. And when I started, even with this company, when we very first founded the company, I wanted the prices to be as like low as possible. And we kept losing money. And it was like, oh, okay, I'm definitely underestimating the workflow even now. So if you're listening, that is a good takeaway. Don't underestimate the workflow. There's a lot to do across the board. Rochelle, what else did you learn? Like, I think you've published like 40 episodes as we record it today. Is that right?
Yeah.
So what else have you learned, and how long did it take you to learn some of those lessons?
Sure. So I definitely want to touch on like understanding the different softwares that you need to record. So you like to use Zoom, right? So you could use Zoom. I like to use Zencastr to split like my guest audio and my audio. So it's separate. So I can edit the files on two different files, right? And then Where do you store those files? Well, they automatically will get uploaded to Dropbox. How do you get that to your editor? How's that workflow get to that editor? When that editor is done, how do you know that it's done? So I think understanding like how not only your workflow, but the softwares that need to be utilized in order to like actually move it through the workflow. How are you managing your workflow? I use monday.com. Great. Well, how do you get your content from your guests? I use a form where my guest has to fill out all of the information and it automatically gets uploaded. So I think that was a big one for me, was understanding the different softwares that you need to actually produce your show. And then also time management. That was a big one for me. I was always trying to run around my guest schedules and time zones. I'm in the UK. I'm 8 hours ahead of the West Coast, 5 hours ahead of the East Coast. And I was trying to like fit into everybody else's time. And now I only record one day a month. And I batch record all of my guests so I can get podcasts like maybe 8 to 10 guests in a day. And I'm set for the next couple of months. And then I'll do solo shows as well. And I batch record all my solo shows one day a month. So I'm really only podcasting 2 full days out of the month and I get a ton of content. So I think those are two major takeaways.
Yeah, there's a lot here. Part of the workflow is the software that you need to produce and to record the episodes. I love that you mentioned that you're batching episodes. I think that's so smart. And one of our clients, he's extremely successful in his business and he's been having a hard time like getting these podcast episodes out. And his team was talking to me and like, how do we get him to not always feel like he's behind the eight ball? And I told him, here's what you got to do. Batch episodes. Have a day, one day a month, or maybe even one day a week where you're recording a couple. So you're always ahead of the game. You're never too stressed out. You could take a vacation. So that's 8 to 10 interviews you might do in one day, even though you're a totally different time zone than most of your people. So you're going above and beyond. Sounds like you're a wife, a mother, a business owner, and a podcaster. And that is a good takeaway for anyone listening, because we're thinking, we're like, man, I'm too busy. And it's like, well, she's in a different time zone, putting her kid to bed and then jumping on here with me and doing her own episodes as well. It's just, you've got to put that attention and you've been doing a really good job, and especially doing all these interviews. You're doing your solo shows. And I think that's a good takeaway for the listener, because the interviews help you grow your podcast. The solos help you grow your influence. In my opinion, you need people to know who you are and what you do and what you stand for, where your line is in the sand. And you get that mostly from your solo episodes. So I love that you mentioned that. So I have a few questions. Tell us again, what is the software that you record quickly? Mm-hmm. This is like rapid fire round. Perfect. What do you record on?
I record on Zencaster.
Zencaster. We'll put that in the show notes. And then you said you still need to figure out a place once you've recorded it. Where are you going to store the file? Where do you store your files?
As soon as I click like stop recording, it automatically uploads to Dropbox.
How have you made it so that it can go to Dropbox when Zencaster and Dropbox aren't normally connected?
So I've synced them. They actually do integrate. So okay. It works out really well. If they didn't integrate, I would use Zapier or Integromat to make those two softwares speak. Yeah.
So it goes into your Dropbox. And then what happens? The editor automatically downloads it?
So my VA, that's like one part where it's like the automation isn't there. So I do have to have my VA, after I'm done recording for the day, she will get those links and put it in my Monday workflow. And as soon as she drops that link into that particular task for that episode, it'll automatically alert my editor and he'll go in and he'll start editing each episode.
Awesome. To clarify your Monday workflow, is this something that happens on Monday or is it the website monday.com?
Monday.com.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And do you also happen to do it on Monday? You're like, I may as well do it on Monday. It's called Monday. That's my day.
That's so funny.
If it was called Tuesday, I would do it on Tuesday, but it's not called Tuesday. Okay, cool. So we'll make sure that Monday is a link in the show notes as well as a resource for the listener. And so it goes to the editor, not automatically, but at the end of your recording sessions, you might do 8 to 10. Then your virtual assistant is going to upload the links for you so that the editor can do all of that stuff.
Right.
And now how do you know when it's done? Because you mentioned that before, like you want to know, how do you figure this out? So how did you do it?
Yeah. So I know it's done because as soon as he's done editing, he'll drop the link in Monday. And I have like 100 automations set up in monday.com, not the day. And as soon as he drops the link in there, he doesn't have to do anything. He just has to drop the link in a little box. And that automatically sends me an email to say, hey, this is ready for review, or it's ready to listen to. And then I know it's ready. And then it moves into the next stage of the workflow, which is creating the description, the blog, and so forth.
Is there ever a time that it's podcast day, or tomorrow is podcast day, and you're thinking to yourself, man, I want to travel tomorrow. Man, I'm not sure if I'm feeling, I didn't sleep that well. I'm not sure if I can do these. Do you ever like cancel the interviews last minute because it's stressful, or how do you avoid doing that?
So I definitely do not cancel on my guests. I respect their time. I respect their expertise, and I respect what they're going to bring to my audience. So I will never cancel on my guests. Like 100%, that's not cool. Unless it's like an emergency with my kid or my husband, you know, or my family. But no, I don't cancel on my guests. I do have had, you know, as a podcaster, you do get your guests canceling on you. And I don't take it personally. I just know that life happens sometimes. But for me, I definitely don't cancel on my guests, even if I'm like not feeling it and it's not like a great day. It's, I think that's when you just develop discipline, is you do things that you don't want to do to get to where you want to go in your business. And so regardless of how I'm feeling, my big why is much bigger than how I'm feeling at that moment. So
I love that. That's how you develop discipline. Thank you for going into that. How about when you're doing solo episodes? Do you postpone those sometimes?
Sometimes I do. Sometimes I do postpone them. And it might be because sometimes I'm not in a creative flow, but it won't be more than like a week. But I don't make myself feel bad about it. Sometimes you just aren't in a mood to create. And I think we could sometimes be some of our like worst critics. And we can really beat the hell out of ourselves for not doing things the right way. But what's great about having your own podcast is that it's yours. As long as you're like 95% consistent and your audience knows that you're going to show up for them, I think that's what matters most. It's better to develop valuable content than just content for the sake of being consistent every single week or however often people are choosing to put out their podcasts.
How do you get into the flow? On days that you're trying to develop discipline, or you have the discipline, and sometimes you would not record that day just because you weren't into it. But I bet you that there's other days that you're close, you're almost ready. So what do you do to get into the flow or the mood to create?
Okay, that's cool. So we're kind of like nerds over here at Cut Class, and we really like to understand like flow theory. And so, and that really is like understanding like when you as a person create like your platinum work. What time of the day do you know that you can like crank out amazing work? And I mean, it's where like, you know, time melts away. You can crank out 4 hours of work in 1 hour of work. So I know when that flow for me hits, and it's usually right in the morning. That's when my brain's on fire. That's when I'm excited. That's when I have so much like brain juice to create. So for me, really, it's about like hitting that right time of the day. Like I wouldn't want to create probably after this podcast because it'll be 9 p.m. My brain is just not going to produce that platinum work. So I would say for me, it's not necessarily like working out or like listening to music. It's timing and understanding like, Rochelle, when do you produce that platinum work and hitting that time every day when I need to produce like my best project, my best podcast?
That's really interesting. Something that you said stuck out to me, a couple things. You know, what time of the day is it that you can crank out, quote, platinum work? Love that. The next one was that you can get basically 4 hours of work done within 1 hour. And, you know, when you're, it's late at night and you're scrolling through, like, I don't even know what these things are called these days. I'm too old for this, but it's like reels or shorts or whatever they call those. And I was doing that. And one of them was really beneficial. It was this professor that said something to the effect of, you want to work for 30 minutes straight and then take like a 15 minute break instead of working all of that time. And he said, like in 8 hours, you'll accomplish a significant amount more because after trying to stay focused and pushing yourself past some point, our brains have a hard time staying focused on it. And so they were saying to take breaks. Is that part of how you get 4 hours worth of work in 1 hour, or is there a different thing that you're doing?
Yeah. So I think he might have been referencing the Pomodoro technique, which is working in like 25-minute sprints. And then after that 25-minute sprint, you take a 5-minute break and then you do another Pomodoro. And after 4 Pomodoros, you take like a longer, like a 30-minute break, and then you can go back into working. So it is definitely part of how I choose to work, breaking up like kind of like speed working and taking those short bursts. Mm. But yeah, definitely am using like the Pomodoro technique is super smart, but also just kind of knowing when I work best. So some people are night owls. My husband, he can work through the night and he like produce like awesome work. And I'm like, I can't do that. Like it would never work for me.
Mm. I've got so many potential questions. How about we start here while I queue up a different one? If there was a question, somebody asked me this on their podcast the other day. If there was a question that we missed, they said at the end of the podcast, that you wish that I would have asked you, what would it be? And it made me think, and I'm like, I don't know, maybe this. So I'm just going to ask you that question. If there's a question that you wish that I asked on this episode today, what would that be?
How did you learn to create your podcast? How did you even understand and like learn to even get it off the ground?
I knew you would be better at asking questions than me. Why don't we go with that one? How did you get it off the ground? How did you learn how to do this?
Yeah. So we're not anti-school at Cut Class. We're a little anti-school at Cut Class. I mean, that's the name of our company. And so we really love online learning. Like if we can learn something like in an hour, we really love that. So, you know, we learned how to create an online course by taking an online course to teach us how to do that. So I took an online course to learn how to create a podcast. And so that was super beneficial. And I think some people can get stuck on, well, I don't know how to do that. And it can be for anything. It doesn't necessarily have to be for a podcast, but in our time right now, anything that you want to learn in this world is at your fingertips, whether it's with your laptop or it's on your phone. And so I just learned how to launch a podcast, and I took it through Jenna Kutcher's podcast lab. And it was like, I don't know, like 4 or 5 modules. And after like, I don't know, like 3 hours, I was like, cool, I know how to start a podcast. Let's rock. So it's not as easy as that, because you do have to learn it and then implement it, right? But yeah, just simply going through an online course and implementing what she said, and boom, there you have podcasts.
So. Boom. I like that you say boom. That's my thing. I think I started it, but I'm not sure. With Jenna's thing, there was like 5 modules. Do you remember what some of those were?
Yeah, I think there was like, okay, your niche, like find a niche, figure out kind of what your podcast is going to be about, because you don't want to be talking about like cheese and business and coffee and like fitness. Like it just won't make sense. Like your podcast, Adam, is all about podcasting, right? Mine's about like educating people on small business stuff. So figuring out your niche was kind of like number one, how to write podcast scripts, how to design your like artwork, what the dimensions were, how to upload your, pick a streaming service, how to edit, which softwares to utilize to edit your podcast, and then also how to market your podcast as well. So there's a few different things in there that you learn. And it was like all the basic stuff that you need to just like, oh, and equipment, what type of equipment that you need to use. Cause you don't really need super fancy stuff. Like you do want to have good audio, obviously, but you don't have to have like thousands and thousands of dollars worth of equipment to get a podcast off the ground.
100%. What did you mean by podcast scripts? And how do you do that?
Sure. So I still like to script my podcasts. And that means like scripting, literally like writing out your script and like how you do your introduction and then how you're going to actually walk your listeners through a workflow, not your workflow, excuse me, your podcast. So I like to break down my podcast either in steps or like sequences. And that helps me stay focused on solo shows specifically to walk that listener through something I'm teaching them or like just knowledge bombs. Like I like to break my podcast down in steps. I think it's a little bit easier for me, but it's also digestible for the listener. But I literally read my podcast, but I use different, you know, fluctuations and pitches in my voice. So you don't really know I'm reading it, but I do need to have my podcast script still to this day.
Strong takeaway there. The takeaway with the niche and drawing your line in the sand and standing for something and not having it about wine, cheese, podcasting, business, health, exercise, fitness, diets, keto, and everything else. It can be very helpful. So I like that, to niche down and speak to one person. What are you doing today to market your podcast because of either what you learned on that course or that you're doing on your own? What are you doing for marketing?
When I first began, I was trying to really leverage social media. And then I went to like some masterclass by some guy, I can't remember, but he said something really cool that I really loved. And he was like, a lot of people spend a lot of their time trying to like convert people to listen to podcasts that aren't converted. So people that are on social media love social media. They might not be listening to podcasts already. People that are out networking, you're trying to get them to like listen to your network, listen to your podcast, but they're networking, they're doing something else. So he's like, you want to convert the converted, people that are already listening to podcasts. So what I've done is I'm still like promoting, yes, on social media, but it's not as much. And I am now doing a lot more guest podcasting because these people are already listening to podcasts. So I am marketing it, but I've kind of shifted it to people that are already converted. Hopefully that makes sense.
To me, it makes 100% sense and I love it. It's brilliant. So at first you were thinking, oh, I've got to leverage social media. You're still doing some of that, but you learned how to play to the player, how to convert the converted. So you're doing more guesting because those people that you are on their show, every single listener is a podcast listener. Woohoo. So now it's pretty easy for them to go to your podcast. So there's going to be some people listening to this episode and they're going to be like, whoa, I love Rochelle, mostly because she spells her last name differently than Grow Your Show, but it's still Grow and I need to check her out. And so now you're going to get, you know, 5 more listeners today. Is that
perhaps? Yeah.
Perhaps. Maybe 3,000.
Fingers crossed. No.
I love it. That's really, really good. How about for equipment? Is there any pros or cons from, you know, your journey of what mics to use, webcams, or other types of equipment that you need for a podcast?
Sure. So I don't have video with my podcast. However, I do have good lighting. Hopefully you agree. But I have a Yeti, which you said isn't the best, but I can blame that on Jenna Kutcher. It's okay. It's totally okay.
I'm sorry to cut you off. You brought up the Yeti and the Blue Yeti. I don't know how many times I've said it on this podcast. This is probably pretty close to episode 200. I haven't looked it up. It's probably going to come out around 200 or 210 or something like that. I'm guessing. How many times I've talked about the Blue Yeti? 210. And it's just funny because the only thing I believe the Blue Yeti is great at, the only thing that I think that they're wonderful at is marketing. That's the one thing, is you type in good podcast mics, it comes up. You go to a direct Amazon link and the difference is a condenser mic like the Yeti will pick up a lot of other sounds. It'll hear you, your chair creaking, your breathing. It will hear dogs barking, children crying, mailman driving by, sirens, whatever. And the dynamic mics only pick up, because they're less sensitive, they only pick up what's right next to the mic. So they end up getting a better overall sound. But yeah, anyway, I had to say that. I'm sorry. I took so much of your time. So what about other things besides microphones or how to use them or anything else equipment-wise? Yeah.
So, you know, yes, the Yeti has really great SEO is what we're saying. But I do have to agree though, honestly, like just listening to you, even there's been like a few podcasters that I've been on their show and I could just tell like the difference, like just saying hello. And, you know, and that's just like from being a new podcaster. And so I would say I thought the Yeti was great, but I do now know, being a little bit more seasoned, that there are way better mics out there. So I would say I did try the Kayatica Eyeball, Have you heard about that? It looks like a giant ball that goes over the Yeti.
Is it a K or a C?
K, K-A-O-T-I-C-A. And they also have very good marketing, but it is not a great product. Super shitty.
So, oh, I've seen this.
Yeah, it doesn't work well, guys. So I thought, oh, I think that would be really great.
I need to tell my editors and my show notes writers, don't link to these crappy mics. All right. No Blue Yetis. If you're listening and you're like, I want all the recommendations, Adam, go to growyourshow.com/PDF. You can download a free PDF that only has vetted equipment that me and my team have checked out, vetted, and know that it's going to sound good, look good for what you're doing. And the Kayatica won't be on there, and neither will the Yeti.
For my sound, like, I don't normally record in this room, so forgive me, Adam, but I recorded my closet and...
You know, Yeti would probably sound good in your closet. Like, she's giving me the A-OK signs. Yeah, it probably sounds great in your closet. So
yeah, it does. So, and if you're like a brand new podcaster, you can record in your closet. And I actually took blankets and towels, and I just like took some pins and I just pinned them in, line all the walls and the ceiling and the door. And it's a small space. And I just padded out my whole little room and it works fine. Like, and it works all right with my Yeti. My Yeti, I know, doesn't sound good in this room because it's like wood floors and white walls, but it works well. So I wouldn't say I have fancy equipment, obviously, but it's more of my environment that I made sure is on point.
That is really, really good. How about internet? What do you use for internet? Are you hardwired or Wi-Fi? Did you have to upgrade your internet to be able to stream from England to wherever your guests are?
No, my Wi-Fi is great. We live in a new build. So our house is only 4 years old. So we have like fiber, like right into our house. So I'm on Wi-Fi and my Wi-Fi is like on point. So it's solid. Like, I don't need to like hardwire it or anything.
Cool. And if I'm came to this podcast episode today, hoping for learning to manage a workflow for a podcast, I think I got everything there. And I think you actually did talk a little bit about managing time and being able to get into your peak state so that you can do 4 hours of work within 1 hour. I think, though, we may have missed something, I'm guessing. So is there other ideas that you could pour into a new podcaster so that they're managing their time appropriately?
Yeah, I would say I use Calendly to manage my calendar, and I'm very strict with when I record with my podcast guests. So it's on the second Tuesday every month, and I make that particular appointment on my Calendly blocked. And I will send that particular like appointment link to a podcast guest if they're interested on being on my show. And if they can't make that date or that time, they could try to make the next month. If they can't make that time, they could try to make the next month. And I don't get any like hard feelings about it or get bummed out about it, because at the end of the day, you need to protect yourself, your mental health, your time, and it's your show. You're not a meanie. You're not a jerk. You just have to make sure that you are actually managing your time. Otherwise, other people are going to manage your time and it's going to like really run you into the ground. And then podcasting won't be fun. And ultimately, podcasting should be fun. It should be about building relationships and getting like knowledge and providing value for your audience. And if you aren't happy or like stoked to create your show because you're bogged down with time, like, I mean, it's just not going to be fun, is it?
It is not. And this is really insightful. And I'm glad that you, because we actually talked a little bit about this before we started recording. And I'm so glad that it came out because I felt like it was a very important point. The point that Rochelle's making is that we need to take charge of our time by time blocking. And she uses Calendly, where she might have, you know, 10 or 12 available slots on only the first Tuesday of the month, instead of just trying to work with whomever and just filling in the gaps. Now, Rochelle, you learned this because you did it the other way in the beginning, didn't you? So yeah, can you go through a little bit of that?
It was so messed up. Yeah. I was just like wanting to get like cool guests on my show. And I was like, yeah, whenever you're available, honey, you do dinner tonight. I got to interview a guest. No, son, you put yourself to sleep. I got to interview a guest today. Like, that's just crazy. Like, I was driving myself crazy and I was just like, this isn't fun. Like, this is not cool. Like, I don't want to even do this anymore. And then I don't know where I even like learned to like batch. Oh, it's because I started batching my social media stuff, like batching like what I was writing. And I'm like, because I hadn't heard about like batching my podcast before, right? And I'm like, why am I not taking the same concept with batching my newsletters and my social content to batching my podcast? Like, duh. So once I like made that switch, I was like, oh, podcasting is so much more fun again.
You know why you'd never heard of batching?
Why?
It's because you only went through 3 out of the 5 modules of that course. You said after 3, all right, I'm done. I know how to do a podcast. You missed that part. Or did you end up listening to the whole modules?
Yeah, I like to get my money's worth. And I like I listened to the whole thing, but maybe like
she never mentioned it.
I don't want to say that, but like maybe I just like glazed over it or don't remember. And maybe I was just so interested in getting it going. Like it, maybe I just didn't clock it. I don't know. But
Rochelle, do you say, cause you said you were excited to get it going. So I have just a quick question. If we're a new podcaster or an about to be a podcaster and we are going between these two things, ready, aim, fire, or ready, fire, aim. What would be some of the pros or cons of starting it without getting it all right, just to have it done, or you know, how long to spend? What do you think? Ready, fire, aim, or a mixture of both?
I think what's kind of cool about like not knowing a lot about podcasting is you don't know what you're going to get yourself into. So I think from that aspect, it's kind of cool just to like ready, what do you say? Ready, fire, aim.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So I kind of feel like it could be a good approach because when you, what is it like, what you don't know, like you don't know. And sometimes like when you do actually know like how monumental a podcast is, it can like scare you. And I'm actually kind of great. I'm actually grateful that like, I didn't really know like how much went into it. Cause then I don't think I would have been like down to do it. But since I'm a bit stubborn, I'm like, well, I'm already committed and I've already started this thing. So I'm going to actually learn to be excellent and be really great at it. So how can I actually refine my process? So I think there's like benefits to both. And if you actually do it the other way where you ready, aim, fire, I think that does give you a lot more structure and it does keep you a lot more focused to launch a good product. But I think there's benefits to both, really.
I agree. I always say to ready, aim, fire with a podcast, but there are definitely some reasons why you might not know everything, but you still should, you know, get it started. You have an audio editor for your podcast. You've got a virtual assistant. Couple questions on this, and then I'll let you go. Should everybody get a virtual assistant? Should everybody have an editor? Did you ever edit your own and then you came into more money and you were like, oh, all right, get this off my plate? How did that go for you? The VA and the editor.
Yeah. So I would say if you can afford to get a VA for like an hour a week, because VAs are not expensive. They're not like some like crazy luxury. You can hire them for like 1 or 2 hours a week. But I would say understand like what your workflow is and how much time each process takes. Record videos either on SendSpark or Loom to train your VA on exactly what you need them to do. And anytime you do bring on a VA, you'll always have that content to send them a video on whatever process you need. So I would say I figured out the things that I physically didn't need to do myself and that I can train somebody to do very quickly and take off my plate. So that's things like scheduling, you know, making sure my guests are going to show up the following week, sending them an email or taking my podcast from Dropbox to, and putting that link on Monday. Like, I don't need to do that. Like, that's silly. And yeah, I actually still do things on my podcast. Yeah, I actually love to let my podcast guests, like episodes, I let them like simmer for a week. And then I actually go back and I will edit the content. And because there's certain things that like, in certain ways that I want my guests to show up for that episode. So there's things that I like to edit out on the content that my VA doesn't do and that my sound guy doesn't do. My sound guy will edit only the audio if there's any like weird like popping noises or whatever. He does that, but I like to edit the content. So yeah, like I think you just kind of let go of things that you don't physically need to do yourself to kind of bring your podcast to life.
Love it. You mentioned sendspark.com and loom.com. We'll make sure those go into the show notes. The thing that you do with these is help to onboard your virtual assistant so that they can have a screen recording and your voice walking them through how to do things. And you'll never have to say it again. You will record it. And anytime you get a virtual assistant or a new virtual assistant, they can just watch the Loom videos and you don't have to record it another time and have that same conversation. So it seems like that can really help your time. Monday.com seems like that can help your time. It's kind of like a CRM, but it's more of a workflow product to make sure that you don't lose track of anything. We'll make sure that that's in the show notes as well so that the listener can check it out. Let's see. Allergic to small talk for business owners. And I'm wondering, you're about 40 episodes in. When do you think you're going to stop the podcast? Do you have like, is there like a minimum amount of episodes you're going for, a minimum amount of years you're going for? Or, you know, do you think you might just quit tomorrow?
I'm not a quitter. Like that just is not in my blood. But I heard some crazy statistic and I'm not going to like quote it correctly, but it was something like there are millions and millions of podcast shows that exist in the world. And of those millions and millions of podcasts, there are only like 300,000 around the world or something crazy that are active. And of those 300,000, only like, I don't know, like 100,000 have reached, like put out podcasts weekly. And of those 100,000 podcasts, only like whatever amount have got to 100 episodes. So I was thinking, okay, I want to at least get to 100 episodes before I say, screw this, because that means that somewhere along the way, those other podcasters have lost steam and they may not be like dedicated, or maybe their business like didn't work out, like whatever it is, there's something about that 100 episode mark that obviously people like just aren't reaching that milestone. So for me, it's definitely getting to that 100 episode point before I'm like, screw this, ain't working, aim for me. But I'm hoping that like I figure out, you know, exactly what I want to do with my podcast. And really, it's just to bring valuable content to small business owners, but really just to make sure that it's something that makes me happy.
Love it. And you want to give good content to small business owners because your company serves small business owners. You are a business coach. Yeah. You help those people. And it's like the top of the funnel. It's the way for them to work with you. Listen to your stuff, share it with their friends as well. Rochelle, thank you for jumping on. For the listener, Cut Glass website will be in the show notes. Also, a link to Allergic to Small Talk is in the show notes too for you. So you can go ahead and scroll down, check her out. And if you leave her an honest rating and a review, let her know you heard about her here. Thank you. And we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
You know, I really don't say this nearly enough. I don't mention this and I feel horrible because it's a great resource for you to be able to take your podcast to the next level. And it's simply a free resource that I don't need your email or anything. It's just a podcasting course that I created that is ended up putting in the very first 6 episodes of this podcast. So if you haven't checked it out, definitely going to want to just check out those first 6 episodes, see how they can help you improve your podcast, get in front of more people, and have a better result where you're making more money through the podcast, etc. So much can happen after you listen through episodes 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. So if you haven't done it, go do it now. And by the way, if you're subscribed, you'll keep hearing more great content. So to those of you who are, I'll see you on the next episode.